Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag #QuestionMark on social media and the text line. And now, it's time for Question Mark.
All right, we've got a lot of questions. Troy's coming in on Question Mark, which I really like. Takes the pressure off me from having to read and answer
rapid
questions.
Fire. Here we go.
Read. live from UCL's Training Center, Schlereth and Evans. Mark Schlereth sitting in Mike's chair as he recovers from open-heart surgery. He'll be back here shortly, really doing well, alongside Denver 7 Bronco insider Troy Rank. And I like this one, Troy, and I want to answer this as well with you. I'll piggyback on you. But here's the question. Go ahead, put your name on it, guys, from 0303. He asked, Troy, if Lynch looks so bad in practice, how come y'all don't talk about bringing in Kaepernick instead of trading for another quarterback?
They went down that road already. Thanks for the text. We appreciate it. They went down that road a couple years ago. John Elway tried to get Kaepernick to rework his contract, tried to get a trade done with the 49ers, and they couldn't make it work. And once that didn't work, by all accounts, the Broncos have kind of moved on from that. They were incredibly interested in Kaepernick, but now he hasn't played in a year, and they went down that road. They didn't work out, and they've moved on. That's the simple answer. Whether he would be the best available, that's a fair question. Totally understand it. But now they've gone down that road once. They couldn't make it happen, and now they're looking for more of a placeholder veteran than Kaepernick. So I don't see that there would be interest in Kaepernick.
I don't either. And I think one of the things that was interesting, and we talked about this, and you had it, the quote, because you were talking to Chris Harris Jr. about this offense, where he said, hey, listen, it's startling. The difference between the ones and the twos is startling, right? It's almost like a completely different offense. One of the issues, and listen, is there some collusion against Colin Kaepernick? Probably. Will they be able to prove collusion against Colin Kaepernick? I don't know. You know, the billionaires become billionaires because they're pretty smart. And they kind of have an understanding of what they're trying to do from a business perspective. So will they be able to prove that? I don't know. Here's one of the legitimate issues with Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick is not a quarterback who is efficient from the pocket. He struggles from the pocket. He does. When Colin Kaepernick was at his best, and when Colin Kaepernick was playing well, he was playing in a real collegiate offense. And when Jim Harbaugh, the head coach, tried to take him out of that offense to some degree to protect his body, he struggled mightily. I mean, he really fell off the table. And I think the problem that a lot of teams get is the same problem we're talking about in Denver with that quote from Chris Harris Jr., which is there's two separate offenses. So you're going to tell me I'm going to take a guy, bring him in here to play a backup quarterback position, and if he's called upon, I've got to teach 10 other guys a different offense for him to be successful. NFL teams don't want to do that. There's not enough practice time. There's not enough meeting time. They can't trust the guys to take home their little iPads and really go over the stuff. I mean, like that's a big ask of 10 other guys. What we want to do is make a smooth transition from our starter to our backup, a guy who can slide in and call the same exact plays with the same tempo, the same cadence, and just get it done. And that is one of the issues with Colin Kaepernick. Frankly, it's an issue here right now. We heard Chris Harris Jr. talk about it with Paxton Lynch. So, I mean, that's one of the football reasonings. And is it the only reason? Absolutely not. It's not the only reason, but it is a reason. You know, not an excuse. It is a reason. All right, Troy, question Troy or question Mark. We've got the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Who would you rather have, Kyle Sloter, Trevor Siemian, or the Pirate, Paxton Lynch?
It's an interesting question.
Chris, by the way.
Thank you, Chris. I believe you're talking as the backup, obviously, with Case Keenum as the starter. For me, based on what they are looking for now, Siemian would have made the most sense, that type of guy who started in the league, who has the, but you can't have Keenum come in. Siemian's still here. Would he have handled it well? Probably. But you have to move on. That's part of the reason I think at some point you got to decide to move on from Lynch. Like, you just move on, and I know it's hard to admit a mistake when you draft a guy in the first round. I get it, but you see it happening in the league more and more, Mark, where they don't show the patience. So for me, given the situation they're in, I say Simeon would fit best behind Keenum, in that, because they're not, they wouldn't bring in Schloeder to be the backup with no experience. Like, that's not, because if you're going to do that, you just stick with Chad Kelly. So in this situation, what, in terms of what, if you're looking for a veteran backup, Simeon would profile of the best of those three.
All right, here's one right here. Question mark. Mark, the new rule, the new dive rule in the NFL, what happens if a player is diving into the end zone? And that comes from Gil. Then listen, you break the plane, you break the plane, Gil, you're it's a touchdown. But you've got to understand, when you dive, you give yourself up. So when you hit, when you're down, and you don't have to be down by contact, when you're down, that's wherever the ball is at that point, wherever that spot is, you're down. So if you dive at the 5-yard line and you come up a yard short and nobody touches you, you cannot scoot in. You are down at the one. That's the way that goes. Here's where it could become tricky. You know the guys that leap over the top? You leap over the top and a linebacker leaps over the top and meets you, and the ball doesn't cross the line of scrimmage, and you go back and land on your feet. We've seen this before. Then all of a sudden you scramble forward, and you get into a little crease, and you score a touchdown. That used to be a touchdown. When you meet on top, and that linebacker hits you, and you fall back down, your feet touch the ground, boom, whistle, play's dead.
Didn't know that.
It's over.
That's new, obviously.
Right. That's the part that's going to – that's the part that could really drive some people crazy. Or you jump, you leap, you're out here, you're going one-on-one, somebody hits you, you do a helicopter spin, you land on your feet, and you scramble into the end zone. That's not a touchdown. You're down because you left your feet. So that's going to be an interesting – and it really was – you know, that rule is really to protect the defensive players, because what happens is the quarterback – scrambles, and he takes off instead of going foot first. He takes off and dives. Well, you know he's not down. And what ends up happening is guys go out there and hit him.
Right.
And then we get a spearing call, we get a fine, and guys are like, well, he's not down. I'm trying to down the guy. And so they took that confusion away from the defensive players. And I was at the Fox Summit, you know, our seminar, and Ron, Al Riveron. I always want to call him Ron Riveron. Al Riveron addressed us and showed us a bunch of tapes and showed us a bunch of defensive players kind of hesitating, like, do I touch the guy? And then the guy's scrambling and getting 3 or 4 extra yards. So they wanted to take that confusion away. They wanted to take hits off the quarterback away, which is what the NFL always wants to do. They want to protect the moneymakers, you know, them, which are the quarterbacks. So that's part of what they do. Let's kind of look for one more here, Troy. Here's one for you, Troy. The Rockies, are you concerned? Can they take 3 or 4 from the Dodgers? Right now, not only is the pitching a concern, especially from the bullpen, but also the lack of consistency in the lineup. That's a big question mark for you, Troy. So the Rockies, do you look at them as having a situation to get 3 or 4 from the L.A. Dodgers in the 4-game set?
The way they're playing now, they've lost they're 3-7 over their last 10, I would say, and thanks for the text, I would say it's unlikely they're able to take 3 or 4 from the Dodgers. Where you hold out hope is the pitching matchups favor them. When you got Freeland, you got Gray lined up, they're not getting Kershaw in this series. I mean, I would argue that 3 of the 4 pitching matchups line up for them. They have a chance in that regard, but the texter brings up a good point. As much criticism as the bullpen has earned, and they have earned it, let's be honest, part of the reason they're playing all these close games, because they're not scoring any runs. I mean, you get tacos for 7 runs in a game, not for a 3-game series. I mean, they got to start scoring some runs, Mark, especially at home. You're not going to consistently win at Coors scoring 3 and 4 runs. The roster isn't built for them to win that way at home. You got to win 7-5, you know, 6-2, give the bullpen a break, get out to an early lead. But here's the problem that I'll tell the texter. They stink in first innings. They're the worst first inning team in baseball, and they stink in the 7th inning. So if they don't solve one of those 2 innings, they're not going to the playoffs. And they've got to get hot at home, because they come out, they go to Houston and Atlanta, and guess who's waiting for them in Houston as it sets up now? Verlander and Cole. So if you go 2-2 against the Dodgers, then you get on the road and have to go face Verlander and Cole, Now you're talking about a 3-7 becomes, you know, now you're 8 games under over a 15-game stretch, right, and then you're in big trouble.
And when they, but remember, when they faced Cole here a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it Anderson that went toe-for-toe and actually outpitched Cole?
Yeah, but again, doing it in Houston is a different animal.
It is a different animal. Okay, last one on ?/question Troy. And this comes from, you know, a texter. There's no name. You can put your name on these. And it is what used to be the great strength of the Broncos was that defensive secondary. It looks like they lack depth now. And he's concerned, texter's concerned about Bradley Roby becoming that kind of legit number one. What have you seen in camp, Troy? And how do you address those question marks in that defensive secondary?
Yeah, it's not the no-fly zone, it's the new-fly zone. I mean, it has changed a lot, let's be honest. No T.J. Ward, no Aqib Talib, so it's different. As we've talked about, Mark, you know, those guys were the soundtrack of the defense. They brought a razor's edge. So they are different. It doesn't mean they can't be good, but they're going to do it in different ways. I expect them to be much more exotic in their coverage, less press. Now, they're still going to press, don't get me wrong, but they're going to protect some of these guys, too. Because as it stands, and the texture's completely right, Isaac Yadam, the rookie, is the nickelback. Now, they want it to be Tremaine Brock, but he's got to get on the field, and he just came back yesterday. He needs to play hasn't played
right
in a year.
Here's the interesting thing about Tremaine Brock, Troy, and you've mentioned this before, but he played in San Francisco when Vance Joseph was in
San Francisco. That was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. He signs. He really hasn't played. Last year, he played like, I don't know what it was. It was less than 50 snaps, I think.
Yeah, he was inactive most of the season and hurt.
Right. And so now you're relying on Tremaine Brock to come in here, a veteran guy who's shown he's had trouble staying healthy and hasn't played in over, well, he didn't really play last year. So, I mean, that's a big concern. Yadam is a guy that, you know, has had some injury issues here early in the OTAs and stuff, but a guy that I really like coming out of college at Boston College, a guy that I thought had great football savvy, and that's the way the Broncos went when it came to drafting this year, is they really made this kind of philosophical change on the kind of guys they want. But that's a lot to ask for a rookie, especially when 65% of the time in this league now you're in nickel.
Yeah, that guy's
like a base defense now.
Basically a starter.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're if you're the starting nickelback, you're essentially a starter.
65% of the play. It's like, that's what I thought was silly when they said, well, we want to see, one of the reasons we're letting Aqib Talib go, which is just false in my mind, is we want to see if Bradley Roby can play. He's played 60-plus percent of the snaps. You know whether he can play or not.
Well, but can he play lined up against a better receiver? I think that's a fair argument.
I get that argument, but it had more to do with you wanted to clear up Aqib Talib's salary, and Aqib Talib, when you're winning championships, is one of the greatest guys in the world to have on your team. When you're not, he can be, you know, he's going to let you know exactly what he thinks. So, I mean, there's more reasons than we want to see if Bradley Roby can play. But you're 100% right. You're relying on a rookie corner drafted out of Boston in, what, the fourth round?
Boston College kid
drafted in the fourth round to legitimately be essentially a 65% starter.
It's going to be interesting. Can he challenge Brock for that role? Because Brock's back. Brock's not supposed to play Saturday because he's been out with a hamstring. But are they going to make that a competition? And if so, do they keep Tremaine Brock in that scenario as, you know, more of a dime guy or,
right,
you know, a part-time nickel guy? I think they might have to, Mark, because they are thin back there. I mean, they are thin, and they really can ill afford for Roby not to step up. And Roby, you ask him, he's embraced it. He's had his best off season. It's all football all the time. You ask Chris Harris, you ask his teammates, they say he's ready for this challenge, but he's got to show it. He's a candidate for a contract extension at the end of camp, too. I'm sure they'd like to come in and get him a little less. He may say no because he wants to go out and show he can be a starting corner for out of season where he'd get even a bigger payday. But you can't underestimate and overstate the importance of him playing well for this defense.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be incredibly important. And like I said, you know, it's funny. When I'm doing games for Fox, a buddy of mine here in town has a company, and he has a bunch of contracts with, with NASA, and you know, he's an information guy. And he has a series of coaches that break down personnel groupings and formations, and you can basically toggle these things back and forth and find out, hey, first and 10, you know, this team runs 80% this, you know, this personnel grouping or whatever. And you can see the plays they like to run versus the personnel groupings. And it's kind of a cool little dashboard that he sends me before the games I do, and I can kind of get a sense of what they're in. Just another tool that, you know, like I'll use during my broadcasts. The guy's name is Tom Woods, and he's just a great dude. Like when you play the Miami Dolphins last year, for instance, Adam Gase, he is in 11 personnel. I think it was 84% of the time they're in 11, meaning one tight end, one back, and three wide receivers. 84% of the time, that's what they're in. So you play Miami, and you're going to be in that nickel defense. Like if Yadam is your guy, 84% of the snaps, man, he's going to be on the football field, you know, defending a third wide receiver. And if you're going to play man and you say you think they're going to change some, but this is a team that historically under Wade Phillips and even last year was 85-90% some type of man coverage, you know, man free. That's what they want to do. Boy, that's a lot to ask of a nickelback, especially a nickelback that is, you know, not even a year removed from his college football season.
I think they're going to tweak it, play a little less man. The other thing to keep an eye on is if Yadam and or Brock aren't exactly lighting it on fire, Justin Simmons can come down and work as a nickel type. He can cover. I mean, you wouldn't want to do that, but he gives you versatility as a wrinkle maybe sometimes to protect somebody else in coverage.
Yeah, he's a guy, it's interesting, he's a guy that I thought might end up doing that. And then what you could do is, like you said, put him in those, he could start at safety, but he could play a lot of nickel corner, and then you could bring in whoever
it is. Thomas, Jamal Carter.
Right.
I mean, they have more depth at safety than they do at cornerback right now.
Right. And so then you would have, is it Will Parks or?
Will Parks, yes.
He's Sue in that Cravens, mix. Right?
Sue Cravens.
Yeah.
I mean, they have way more depth at safety than they do at cornerback.
Right. But then again, you know, when you start getting into that, then we start talking about what were the issues last year, giving up 29 passes, right? One of the issues was communication.
Yeah, you're right. And you start switching guys in and out, and then all of a sudden a blown coverage. Because they, you know, their pass defense wasn't the same last year.
Right.
The only thing they did well was in yards per game, but they allowed 29 touchdowns. They really struggled on change of possession points. They weren't good in the red zone. I mean, this is a big year for the defense. And, again, part of it is this defense was built to play with a lead, and you saw that last year, that when they weren't leading, they start taking chances, they start freelancing,
right,
and they're much more vulnerable to mistakes.
Right. And one of the things that they're going to have to do is, you know, this is a team that, to me, over the years, Troy, and it's kind of one of the ways – the NFL has changed. You know, back in my day, and even 5 years ago, and there's still some teams that have this philosophical approach, and that philosophical approach is, hey, build your front seven, control the line of scrimmage. It's all front seven, front seven, front seven. You know, there was a day where it was all front seven, and you just played, you know, cover two. Basically roll up your corners, have big corners. They don't have to really run. Just physically reroute guys, play your big corners, and then, you know, dominate the line of scrimmage and play zone and, you know, make a team throw it in the, you know, behind the corner in front of the safety to the sideline because it's one of the harder throws to make, and you figure, hey, eventually you're going to have an incompletion there, eventually you're going to have a tip ball, eventually you're going to run into the sideline, whatever it is, and we're going to be in a third down and long situation, and we're going to be able to pressure your quarterback with our exceptionally, you know, talented front seven, and we'll get off the field. And that's how the Dallas Cowboys and Jimmy Johnson played it all the time. It's what they did, you know. It's just like, hey, you can't put 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 plays together and score touchdowns. You may kick field goals, but we're going to beat you because we're exceptionally talented on the other side of the ball. You know, so that's how teams play. It's not played that way anymore. The league just doesn't operate that way anymore, especially with the quick passing game, the quick hitting game. And you look at the Broncos, you know, they're a team that wants to play, and they've been built kind of backwards. They want to press you. They want to get you out of that quick passing game. They want to disrupt those routes, those quick slants, those little flat routes, all the things that you try to do as an offense. And they want to get you into those third down and long situations with their defensive secondary, basically leading the way so that they can unleash that NASCAR package, and they can unleash, you know, Von Miller and Bradley Chubb and Shane Ray and Shaq Barrett. That's kind of the way they're built. And it'll be interesting to see if they can maintain that kind of philosophical approach to football that they've had the last few years.
Well, they're definitely going to get after the quarterback. With in the NASCAR, it's not four on the field, it's four on the floor.
Uh-huh.
They're going to get after with Chubb, Ray, Barrett, and Von Miller in the game at the same time. That would allow Ray maybe to be inside. But, I mean, you just watch how they run some of those pressure drills, and they're basically saying, Mark, you can't get the ball out fast enough. You can't hold on to the ball. We're going to get you. And I'm not saying it's 85 Bears, but that's the idea.
Right.
We're going to get to you so fast, you can't put three, four, five guys in routes. You're never going to get to – they're never going to get to the route. So that's another way you protect yourself in coverage, is the pressure is so enormous, the coverage doesn't get exposed.
It's one of the things that they're going to have to do, and it'll be interesting to see, because I know – There's probably not going to be a lot of opportunity here early in this first preseason game on Saturday, Troy, but this is an offense in Minnesota that theoretically is a tough matchup.
Yes.
I mean, they've got a running back that, they've got running backs that can run it. They've got running backs that can, they can catch it out of the backfield. Jarrett McKinnon had like 51 catches last year. I mean, they've got guys that can, they can get it done out of the backfield. They've got two outstanding wide receivers in Thielen and in Stephon Diggs, and they've got a really good matchup tight end. I don't know that we're going to see many of those players actually play this weekend, but this will be an interesting matchup. And, you know, I think for me, one of the great things we're going to get to see is we're going to get to see kind of the backups that used to be here. We're going to get to see a Slaughter. We're going to get to see, a Trevor Siemian. I think that's going to be one of the things that, that will make this a really intriguing matchup.
Well, Minnesota's legit. As we just said, a Bleacher Report ranks them their number one team overall. I mean, this is a tough test coming out of the gate, even if it is 10, 12 snaps. I mean, it is a tough test. They're a deep team. They're a talented team. And offensively, with Cousins, they think they're a better team than they were with Keenum. We'll see. I mean, they get Dalvin Cook back. They lose McKinnon to San Francisco.
Right.
He got paid. But part
Dalvin
of the,
Cook is – but Dalvin Cook was legit.
He was better than
yeah.
– he was.
And
good.
I don't know that we'll see him either, because he's coming off, what, a
– ACL.
ACL. But he was – yeah, he was the guy.
Yeah, he was cruising toward rookie of the year type conversation until he got hurt. Their dynamic offense, the one guy they have that I know the Broncos privately wish, or maybe they do think they have now, Kyle Rudolph was a safety net for
right.
Case Keenum last year. Case Keenum, they had 17 touchdowns and no picks in the red zone, and he leaned on Rudolph. That's another reason I'm interested in this game. Is Jake Butt going to emerge as the number one tight end?
Right.
He's blocked better than I expected, and that's when you look at Minnesota, when you're talking about, they have versatility. They have Stephon Diggs and Thielen who are getting after it. You have a tight end who's a touchdown threat in the red zone. And, I mean, that's what the Broncos are trying to basically emulate here, especially if Jake Butt becomes a guy who could catch 40 passes and score four touchdowns. I mean, this offense is going to look dramatically different than even we expected.
Yeah, and Jake Butt, I think, a huge key, a guy that needs to really play well and, you know, is essentially a rookie because he got redshirted last year. Early in the program, and I want to bring this back up, we had from fanside.com, we had a list of five guys that need to play better if the Broncos are going to do anything that makes, makes them noteworthy toward the end of the season. So we had our five guys on the list. We'll kind of review those five guys. I want to get a couple of guys from you, based on what you've seen in camp and the way you've covered this football team, that you think need to step up to have a great season for the Broncos.
Mark Schlereth here. When you're looking to replace your windows, you want the best. That's why I endorse Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. They sell Infinity from Marvin fiberglass windows. You can't buy Infinity windows from big box stores, so you know they never compromise on quality. Infinity fiberglass windows offer unparalleled value, energy efficiency, and durability. So call my friends at Gravina's Window Center of Littleton, 303-794-0490, or find them online at windowsforyourhome.com, and make sure you tell them Stink sent you.
Welcome back. Schlereth and Evans live from UC Health Training Center. Troy Rank alongside Mark Schlereth, and now I got it for sure. It's 8:30. You know what that means? Practice kicks off in an hour, Troy.
Somebody's good at math.
Correct.
Somebody's got, you know what? I've been working on math all day long. And I finally got to a situation where subtraction was easy. and I nailed it this time. I absolutely nailed it. So earlier in the program, for those of you who are just joining, you 8 o'clock listeners that weren't here at 6 o'clock, we talked about the five players, according to Fanside.com, five players that have to improve for the Broncos to have success. The five players from Fanside were five: Jared Valdir, the right tackle, has to fix a hole that's been there for years. Four, Darian Stewart, a little bit lost last season without his running mate, T.J. Ward. Three, Garrett Bowles, last year's first rounder, the left tackle, that really was exceptionally athletic, but from a football acumen standpoint, really lacked what it takes to be good at that position. Number two, Devontae Booker, a running back that obviously has not produced, never had a run over 20 yards, as you pointed out earlier in the program. And the number one guy that's got to step up his game, Brandon Marshall. I think there are reasons that his game slipped off last year, and those reasons were injury. I think he'll be back. I think he'll be good again. He will be pressured a little bit by Josie Jewell. So I would ask you, Troy, as you follow this team, you've been covering this team for Denver 7. You're the insider. You've been here at all the practices, all the OTAs. You're here every day from from dawn till dusk. What are your number one guys that need to really pick up their game for the Broncos to have success this year?
Well, I would tweak that list. I like some of it. I just think the order's wrong. I would go right to tackle. I would say Bowles and Valdir would be number one and number two on my list, followed by the running back, Devontae Booker, and or whomever ends up starting. But everyone on offense is like top four on my list of five. And then pick one defender on who you think it should be. For me, I would probably say Bradley Roby before Brandon Marshall. I think they're going to be covered at inside backer.
Uh-huh.
Whether if Marshall plays well or Davis plays well, they really like Josie Jewell. So I think they're more covered there than the article presents. But for me, that article misses the single point. Like, it doesn't matter who steps up when one, they need great to good to great play from the quarterback position. So that, for me, that's the focus right now. I'm not
right.
like, don't miss the obvious stupid thing to me. Like, the quarterback is it right now. And we got to see it. We've seen what we like from Keenum, but this starts there. Can Keenum play well? That's number one. Then it goes down to the offensive line for me.
Mm-hmm.
Valdir and Bowles, are they the real deal? Is Connor McGovern the real deal? We don't know that.
Right.
And then you go to running back. Who is the running back? For me, Booker has a tenuous hold on the job, and if he keeps it, it's going to be because of his pass pro.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm with you on the tackle position. And you look at this tackle position, the right tackle's been an abject disaster. Like, I almost lost my mind last year when Menelik Watson in a preseason game was proposing to his girlfriend.
I thought you would like that. You're the modern man. Oh, wait, never mind.
Yeah, no, I was. Like,
you were his teammate. I could see you choking him out as somebody else sprays him with mace.
I was literally, my wife and I were watching the game, and I said, one, Alex Gibbs we would have had to pull Alex Gibbs off. He literally tried to choke him out, like you're talking about.
That I would have believed, because
Alex would have gone absolutely ballistic. And then two, honestly, we'd have cut him. Like, back in the day, he'd you can't play here. Like, you're getting fired. Like, I don't know that anybody would even attempt that back in our day. Like, it would have just been over. So that right there for me was just like you can't have that. That's just not appropriate. But it's been a disaster. The right tackle position has been a disaster here. And you mentioned the names, the Donald Stevensons of the world, the Menelik Watsons of the world, the Michael Schofields of the world. It's been a real issue. And then you couple that with, the right guard position. You couple that with the rest of what's gone on here as an offensive line. Interesting conversation I had with John Elway on Sunday that, the depth, maybe we'll lack a little bit of depth. This is my own, perspective. But the starting unit obviously needs to be better. They think that Jared Valdir, even though he's toward the end of his career, is a significant upgrade. If they can keep him healthy, he'll basically fix that problem area that has been the right tackle position. But the conversation I had with John was it's not always just the O-line's fault. Like, there's a lot going into it. And the point was, the offense that Bill Musgrave is creating here. And they're creating this kind of on the fly, Troy. Yeah, they have principles. Yeah, they have things they want to execute. But part of it is, let's find out what we do well. And I think that, I think that's a good thing. But it's not always the O-line's fault. You know, it's the quarterback holding on to the ball. It's a tight end, you know, not blocking the end of the line of scrimmage. It's a running back missing a blitz pickup. It's a receiver not understanding that he needed to run a hot route. It's a receiver that gets beat in man coverage and doesn't get open. You know, there's a lot of things that go into it. It starts because it's easiest to see with the offensive line saying, boy, they were really porous, or boy, they were really bad. But it is a lot more than that. And I think that's another reason.
Well, that's why they hired two new line coaches.
Right. And it's another reason that Case Keenum is here, is because Case Keenum historically has been, one, a guy that gets the ball out of his hand accurately and gives his running backs and gives his wide receivers a chance, or tight ends a chance, to catch the ball, you know, before a defender's on top of them and make a play, make a move, get some extra yardage. And then, two, you know, you look at escapability, and there are the people that rate this kind of stuff, but Case Keenum was one of the best in the league of extending the play, keeping it alive, and throwing an accurate ball. And that's part of the protection of the offensive line. So just Case Keenum alone being here is going to take, I think they had 52 sacks they gave up last year. That's going to significantly reduce that number, probably into the 30s alone, just having Case Keenum here.
Well, you saw it with Manning, how he protected an offensive line. The ball mm-hmm. comes out quickly. Doesn't mean he had great offensive lines here.
Right.
But when the ball's out in 2.1 seconds, it's hard to get sacked. It's hard to give up sacks. Last year, they were doing a lot of 5- and 7-step drops. They were running 3 wide receiver sets when they didn't have 3 wide receivers. It's kind of the Post Malone rock star 21 Savage line. Why do you have 12 cars if you only have a 6-car garage?
What is that line?
He's like, what? I just love making pop culture references.
Right. Man. Give me that one again. What was the line from?
Post Malone and his hit with 21 Savage. It's like, why?
That's the song?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, those are the artists.
Oh, those are the artists.
Those are the artists.
Post Malone is an artist?
Yes, he's an artist. Better Now, 92 Explorer. Come on, man. You're killing me.
What about Malone and the Post with Stockton?
Yeah. How did that work?
Roll.
How many championships did they win?
Well, they went to one. I remember them going to one.
And they lost to Michael Jordan.
Yeah, well,
who
I mean,
cares?
Everyone
lost to Michael Jordan in a championship. Okay, Post Malone, I get it. Yeah.
Issue is they were running an offense that didn't suit the personnel. Now you have 4 receiver targets that you look like you're going to trust in DT, Emmanuel Sanders, Cortland Sutton, Deshaun Hamilton. Okay, now you got something going here. You got a quarterback that's comfortable taking the ball under center, which should help the run game.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have a guy that gets the ball out quickly. So you can protect guys through scheme. Because let's not pretend that they got the top right tackle on the market in Jared Valdir.
Right.
And that they have the top left tackle in Bowles. They don't. But you can help them mm-hmm. by running the football, as you know, keep guys off balance, and then the ball's coming out quickly.
Right.
Now you get frustrated rushers instead of guys who are literally with bibs on slobbering to get to the quarterback, as Kerrigan was, or Khalil Mack. I mean, they'd see Denver on the schedule, and they're just running to the practice field. I mean, it was like when the 85-mile-per-hour mop-up man comes into the game in Major League Baseball, and it's a race to the bat rack. At least you can protect them through scheme, and the two new line coaches, I think they'll be better. I think they'll be how much better? I'm not giving them the benefit of the doubt anymore. You got to prove it to me.
Right.
No more benefit of the doubt with the line.
I've done that too, where you get new guys and you see early in camp and they look fresh and you're like, oh yeah, you know, this is going to be a lot better. I think John's point though, Elway's point to me, is 100% on target, that it is, you know, it's the book, It Takes a Village. I mean, everybody's got to be doing their job for you to be a great protection team. And I was on maybe the greatest protection team of all time. 91 Redskins.
Okay.
9 sacks in 19 games.
Wow, that's impressive.
And you talk about, you know, that's 7-step drops on a consistent basis and never once being in shotgun. We didn't have shotgun in that offense. 9 sacks in 19 games on the way to a world championship.
With shotgun?
No shotgun.
Dang, that's impressive.
Yeah, you know, now we did a lot of, you know, 6- and 7-man protections, but it's still, you know, that's everybody. Again, going to my point, everybody has to be on target. What is this offense? What is this running game? Frankly, I don't know, and neither do you. But what could it be? We'll talk about it next. Hey, welcome back, Schlereth and Evans. As we wrap up the show, taking you right to Pritch and Cecil, UC Health Training Center. We're live as the Broncos set to kick off practice at 9:30 this morning. Mark Schlereth alongside Troy Rank. And Troy, you know, interesting. I had this conversation with Bill Musgrave about, you know, what's your running game? Because I'm interested. What are you guys going to do? What are you going to focus on? And everybody runs. You know, everybody runs the same stuff. Everybody runs a gap scheme. Everybody runs counter and power. You know, everybody runs some zone stuff. It's just, what are you going to major in? So my question to Bill Musgrave was, what are you thinking about majoring in? Like, what are you guys going to do? And Billy is like, I don't know yet. Like, we're trying to figure out still what we are. And this is one of the things I love about Bill Musgrave, and one of the reasons I think he's going to be a really good offense coordinator for us, is that he is developing an offense. He has the base things that he wants to do. He's got the base plays. He's got the formations. He's got the personnel groupings. He's got all those things that he wants to do. Now he's going to see what they can do. And they're seeing that in the passing game. What are we good at? What is our quarterback like? It's not just about what I want to run, but I think you look at the last couple of years, especially with Mike McCoy and Trevor Siemian last year, and you're asking a guy who can't do certain things to do a bunch of stuff like, hey, go out and execute the things you can't do. It's like asking a pitcher to go out and throw 100 that throws, you know, 90. Well, just go out and throw 100. Well, I can't throw 100. I'm not created that way, right? I don't have that kind of arm talent. I don't have that kind of arm speed. I don't create that kind of velocity. Well, I think last year we were asking a young quarterback to do things that he just wasn't ready to do. He wasn't capable of. And I think one of the things about Bill Musgrave is he's very good about saying, what do you feel comfortable doing? What are you good at? And let's go out and create an offense that accentuates your strengths. And they're still trying to figure out the running game aspect of that. That's one of the reasons I think this preseason is so important, because they're going to figure out what it is they are, what it is they do in the running game, you know, well, and then how do you create play action off of that running game. So this is an interesting aspect of what's going to go on Saturday night against Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, you've got to figure out who you are. I mean, I've joked with Mike. I mean, their offensive identity was tan dockers, shrug shoulders. They had no identity. They were boring at best, pedestrian at best, boring at worst. Can they have a physical nature to their attack? I'm not saying they're going to be a run-first team, but they have to have some semblance of a running game. They have to have balance. One of the things that concerns me, though, can they find that identity in the preseason? And how much is Ron Leary going to play at left guard? How much is Valdir going to play at right tackle? Do they see just enough, Mark, and they pull the plug and say, you know what, we can't risk injury here? That affects the running game.
Right.
They're not gaining chemistry in the preseason. And so, and who is the guy? I mean, the idea of a committee backfield can work if you're keeping guys who are diverse and different from one another. Like the Patriots get away with it when you have Blunt, and then you have Deion Lewis.
It's
in Tennessee now. Yeah, if you have Blunt and you have Deion Lewis, and then you have a guy catching the ball out of the backfield, another guy, I mean, that's different. You can run three backs / committee. Do they have that here? Well, Royce Freeman, could he be the one and two down back, and then Devontae Booker and or D'Angelo Henderson and Phillip Lindsay type are the third down back?
Right.
Because to go committee, I don't like that term. I'm a little reluctant to think that could be successful. But they do have backs this year that seem to do more out of the backfield than they did a year ago.
Well, let me tell you why you can't go by committee.
Okay.
In Denver versus you mentioned New England and what they've done.
And Philly did it last year to some degree.
Philly did it last year. There is no question. Let me tell you why I don't think that works. I think that when you're New England and you have Tom Brady as your quarterback, we can sit here and say all day long, your first job as a coordinator is to stop the run. You ask any coordinator, if you went to Joe Woods and say, what's your first priority as a defensive coordinator? Stop the run. Everybody says the same thing. But when you face Tom Brady, you know what you're doing? We got to find a way to get to Tom Brady. Like everybody drafts in their own division, what do you draft? You draft man corners or you draft defensive linemen that you think can beat one-on-ones and get to the quarterback. That's what you do, because what you're trying to do is stop Tom Brady. So when you have that and your game plan specific, meaning that you may get a kid, who was a kid that had 200 yards rushing for them a couple of years ago, and then he showed up late to a meeting and never played again. He wasn't even active in their playoff run to the Super Bowl. Yeah, remember that kid?
Kid from Notre Dame.
Yeah, I can't remember the kid's name, but you know.
It was cut like the night. Well, he was inactive.
I mean, they went on a Super Bowl run. He had 200 yards one game, and he's inactive because he was late to a meeting, you know? I mean, it's, that to me is craziness, but that's because they're so game plan specific.
Jonas Gray.
That's right. Jonas Gray. So they're so game plan specific that they'll come in and say, hey, in this particular game plan, we're not going to run it at all. We're going to throw it just about on every down. And then this particular game plan, we're going to run the snot out of it. Like, that's just the way they operate. And they do that because they have Tom Brady. Like, we don't have Tom Brady here. And we know for, you know, Case Keenum to be effective, man, he's got to be effective in play action, meaning you've got to run it. You look at Minnesota last year, even though they didn't run it for a lot of yards per carry, they were one of the number one teams. I think they're the third team in the league as far as the attempts are concerned.
Attempts and yards per game still.
Yeah.
They still got after. They committed to the run.
Right. And so I think you need that for Case Keenum. Tom Brady doesn't require that. It's not a requirement for him to be successful. I think that's part of the requirement for Case Keenum. So I think that's, you know, something they have to do, and that's why that running back by committee stuff is not going to work here. You got to find out who that running back is, and I think as many questions as you have that have to be answered, you've got to answer that backup quarterback position question. You've got to answer all these different questions. You've got to answer what we're going to be from a run standpoint. Who are we going to be, and what are we going to do as far as running the ball is concerned? And who's going to be the guy that's going to get the majority of those carries? Because it's not going to be a committee thing.
Let's pump the brakes a little. You don't have to answer all these questions in early August.
No.
That's why being patient. Now, it hurts you sometimes if you're trying to acquire a player. The leverage may change in trade talks. But we don't have to know after the first game who the starting running back is in the exhibition season. A lot of these answers will come to you. Clarity comes through performance, more practice, frankly, attrition of the roster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like, well, we got 9 starters in our rotation. And then with 1 week left in spring, you got 6 because guys are hurt or one guy stinks. I think we'll know by the third week when they play at Washington and the starters play, what, 2.5, 3 quarters? We'll know who the starting running back's going to be, even if it's an either or. Like, okay, maybe it's Booker, but you know Freeman's going to get 12 to 14 carries. Like these questions answer themselves. And if it's a mystery at the end of camp, then you're in a bad spot. I mean, there's no way around it. So we're going to know who the running back is, and you're going to have a feel for what the identity is. And I would say one thing that helps them is the fact that Case Keenum, even though he's 6 foot, from my research, I got to go back and look through, he might be their smallest quarterback since Marlon Briscoe.
Really?
In the early 60s.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think where they list Case at, 6'1". So, but what I'm saying, even at that size, he can play well under center. He's comfortable under center.
Right.
He doesn't need to roll around and roll out. Because of that, they should be able to run well. I expect them to run well, or at least be effective on the ground. But the difference is, because they ran well under C.J. Anderson, Mark, the difference is they need somebody that's a threat out of the backfield in the passing game. And they did not have that last
year. Right. I totally am 100% on board with you on that. They have to have a guy. I mean, this is such a matchup league. It always has been, but more so now than ever. And you've got to be able to match up with people and create and exploit weaknesses. You know, you got to exploit weaknesses in coverage. You got to make people make decisions on the defensive side of the ball and then see if you can cram it down their throats. And that's something they haven't been able to do the last 2 years. Interesting preseason schedule. You mentioned, you know, the Redskins game 3. You know, this game is going to be interesting because all those quarterback matchups we've talked about, you know, Case Keenum versus Kirk Cousins. We talked about Paxton Lynch versus Trevor Siemian, Kyle Sloter, you know, versus Chad Kelly. You know, that week 3 preseason game, you talked about Garrett Bowles getting absolutely ramshackled by Kerrigan. Like, now you're going to kind of see that week 3 is where you get all those. I mean, you get those matchups, right? You get to play 2.5 quarters or whatever it is, 2 quarters. Like, we're going to see that matchup. You're going to actually get to see what kind of improvement, you know, Garrett Bowles has made from last season, late in last season, when he got shellacked by Ryan Kerrigan. You're going to see the difference that having Ronald Leary hopefully makes lining up at left guard beside you. So that to me is a really interesting matchup.
Well, it's time. It's time to see it on the field, see what it looks like, and see where they need to improve, frankly. They're not going to solve all their issues in a preseason opener. But if you're a Bronco fan, I know you want to see progress. You want to see progress. You want to see reasons for hope, and it should start offensively.
Yeah, there's no question about that. All right, live from UC Health Training Center, Schlereth than Evans. We'll be back tomorrow, the last day of training camp as far as this week is concerned. Last open practice tomorrow. It's a closed practice as they prepare for the Minnesota Vikings, and we prepare as we step aside for Cecil and Pritchard.